So as I mentioned before, one of the things that the IOM identified as one of the five factors for crisis standards of care is that you have assurances regarding legal authority and the environment, and the legal environment. Some of the things that play into that are things like the power of governmental officials on a state and local level to issue emergency declarations, which give extraordinary powers to facilitate a public health response. That is the purpose of an emergency declaration. It is intended to allow you to act outside of the norms, the legal norms, in order to facilitate a public health response. One of the things we see in doing those types of emergency declarations, and we saw them at the beginning of the COVID pandemic in Texas, was alterations, an emergency declaration by the government, by the governor, that changed certain things having to do with scope of practice, licensure, and credentialing requirements. So you can have certain situations where you have a temporary expansion of the scope of practice. Licensure and credentialing requirements, they remade some processes to allow volunteers to get temporary licensure or ability to practice, retired practitioners. So the Board of Nursing, for example, had basically a one-page form that a retired nurse could send in order to be able to provide COVID-related care. You know, a number of nurses did that in the initial push to get vaccines out to people. A lot of retired nurses signed up to administer vaccines. And they had, in doing that, they had to get their licenses reactivated with the Board of Nursing. And through an emergency declaration, there was a way to do that, and emergency rules. One of the other legal considerations, looking at liability risks and protections for healthcare practitioners. And that is important because, by definition, when you are under crisis standards of care, you are acting outside of the norms. So you're acting outside of what would be considered the regular standard of care. And in order for that to happen, there has to be something that addresses the liability risks inherent in that. And then finally, we have to consider anti-discrimination protections. Lisa's going to talk in depth about that. When developing crisis standards of care, this is kind of a good starting point. These are questions to start off asking. From a very practical standpoint, at what point are those crisis standards of care invoked? Again, gets back to the specific, what's the trigger? When is this going to come into effect? A broader question, how can the entire system provide care equitably? We've talked a lot about equality versus equity and throughout this conference. How can we be sure patients are being treated equally across all hospitals? Especially if we are talking about standards of care that apply statewide or apply to a certain section of certain area of the state, that means we're necessarily talking about a number of different facilities. How can we be sure that people are being treated equally across those facilities? And then finally, how can the hospital share resources and the burden of care most effectively? If we have time, we're going to talk a little bit about transfer issues at the end of this presentation. So that's one of the things to consider as well.
All right. So I mentioned earlier, I was the lead attorney representing several disability groups, both Texas-specific as well as national organizations, and then some individual folks with disabilities or who had children with pretty significant medical needs. I do want to stress that disability is not a monolith, right? So some things I'll say, there may be people with disabilities who would vehemently disagree with them. There may be people with disabilities who think I'm not going far enough. So I want to kind of give that caveat that this is a little bit of a high level, but when you're thinking about serving folks with disabilities, every single person with a disability has different needs, and so that's something that kind of you want to remember. I'm going to talk generally about disability-related concerns with crisis standards of care. I'm going to keep you in suspense. Dr. Fine is going to talk about what the actual standards are in Texas that have been OCR approved as options. So briefly, not surprising, if a person with a disability wants to challenge crisis standards of care that have been put in place or proposed, what are the legal bases for that? Obviously, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and the Affordable Care Act. These collectively prohibit discrimination by public entities, private entities, anyone who receives federal funding, which includes Medicaid and Medicare. And so it is essentially everyone in this room or all of your clients. I will say that when we were advocating with the governor's office to develop guidelines, we did not emphasize that last one particularly overmuch. But the ADA and Section 504 themselves also, of course, would prohibit discrimination. And the big thing to remember, and HHS came out, I believe, on March 28th, 2020, and said very clearly that these are not waived in an emergency. You don't get to say, well, it's a pandemic, we can discriminate because, oh my gosh, there's so much going on, we don't want to have to think about this. These laws are not waived in time of an emergency.